All right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com T-Talk podcast, episode 119. I never announced the episodes, but just felt right this time. And this episode, like the rest, are sponsored by Ping Golf and the all-new Ping G425 lineup. Learn more at ca.ping.com. Scott McLeod, how are you today?
Doing great, man. You?
I'm all right. I got a bunch of things to get off the hop here. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with why you didn't golf on the weekend. Because you always golf on the weekend.
I do.
I live through you by saying, hey, Stefan, did you play on the weekend? You're like, yeah, I played 36 and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I had an opening. The wife was away the one day, and I was supposed to have tea time, so Friday night, I was with our good pal, Todd Frazier. He was up at my cottage with my parents. He had his wakeboarding boat up there. And I thought, I'll go wakeboarding. I haven't gone, I've done wake surfing before. I snowboard. I'll try wakeboarding.
Yeah, you're a skateboard guy. So
skateboard guy. You grew up on natural? Skateboard. Exactly. Natural. It wasn't the problem of getting up and, actually doing that process. It's using different muscles. And the fact that I did not stretch prior. Pretty much any activity outside of sitting on my chair, I need to stretch my whole body. I don't know, but I've never seen you stretch before golf, but
I should.
Yeah. If you gave me the range or stretching, give me the stretch. I need to stretch my body from those sports we mentioned is destroyed. I woke up that night. So the next morning, I think we had a 7:45 tea time. I think I woke up at 6 a.m. because I'm old and had to go pee. My back was sore. My forearms were sore.
Oh,
my
lats, baby.
My lat. I could not. It felt like I got COVID shots in the back of my upper back. Couldn't lift my arm above my shoulder. Just in so much pain. Couldn't do it. And I had to pull the shoot. Told the guys, hey boys, I'm not gonna make it.
This is a preview for when you're 50, man.
I know it was awful. So I didn't make it, unfortunately, to golf. But I was talking to our guy Todd. He was telling me some stuff coming down the line. He dropped off some product, sent me this awesome Masters TaylorMade head cover. You can't see it right now. You can see it behind me for putter. Just really nice head cover. But I was saying that, I was looking for this bottle of wine. And they have them in Toronto. Can't find them right now in Kingston, a specific bottle. And he's like, yeah, I can get that. Should I just bill Scott for it? Because he keeps owing you so many bottles of things.
Oh,
and
nice.
Yeah, I enjoyed that jab. So shout out to Todd, constantly hooking us up. And I love, and a jab, too, to Scott. So what else? And shout out to him and his brother. They're active.
Perfect weekend despite the golf.
Exactly. And then, came back and everything was good. And, watched a little bit of the golf on the weekend. Did you end up watching the Palmetto or the non-sandwich challenge?
Have you never been to South Carolina? It's a palmetto, dude.
All right. Well, did you watch it?
No. I saw some highlights. I saw just some quick things, but I certainly didn't sit down and watch it, unfortunately. I had saw some things early in the week, but I wasn't there to the end, unfortunately. It was one of those ones that I said, you know what? I need a little bit of a break on a Sunday. It's been a busy, busy week, but I'm sure you've got lots of takes on it.
Yeah, we'll get to it in a sec. I mean, we told people we'd update on your golf game. You had your first return. I guess, is it a return to senior golf, considering last year you didn't really get to play in a tournament as a senior, really?
No, I haven't actually played a solo event. I don't
debut?
Know.
Debut? Rookie debut?
No. I've rookie debut as a senior, but I haven't played a solo event probably in about 3 years, I guess. Right.
Let's bring it down. Well, how'd it go? We're up at Eagle Creek, Flagstick. What's the proper terminology for this?
It's the flagstick.com PGA of Ottawa tour, and it's the Spring Open, which was presented by Cobra Puma Golf. So, I had a good pairing. Was excited to play this golf course because I played it a lot over the years. The only issue being I was going to be playing off the forward tees, which I've never played off their white tees, which, kind of complicated things. It's certainly not an excuse. It should be easier to play a golf course that's shorter. But I was confused. I mean, I set out a game plan. I got an old yardage book out and said, maybe I can hit it here and hit it there and hit it there. It was like I'd never seen the golf course before when I got there. And unfortunately, we're sort of limited right now with the tour. And you mentioned about stretching. You know, some players just go show up, hit a tee ball, and away they go. I'm usually not that guy. I was always a guy when I played tournaments. I wanted to be there an hour plus in advance, warm up, do your thing or whatever. Again, this is not an excuse, but this should be a lesson to people. Like you said, at least stretch. I didn't. I hit like two putts. Had a coffee with Jeff. I met up. I hadn't seen him in months. Jeff Bonner, the publisher of Flagstaff Golf Magazine, stopped, saw him in the parking lot, sort of rushed to the course. You know, we only get a half an hour. It takes time to get to their driving range and get back.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it takes time to get this old train.
No. Well, it did. It certainly did. I will tell you before I get into it, and I'm not going to give people blow by blow because obviously they'll fall asleep. I'll still give it a B for the appearance. The score, terrible, 81. But it was how I got there that made it quite interesting. And the fact
that you went full Stefan on this round.
Oh, I did. I it was funny. Like I said, I got to that first tee. I was sort of rushed and they had put us off a different tee than I normally would. So it was the normal gold tee up on the top of the hill. Well, I had prepared to possibly, you know, hit a hybrid or three wood off the tee. And I was like, oh, okay, now I'm going to have to hit driver. Well, I've hit a driver. I'll just grab driver and away I go. Two toe shots in a row, flared to the range, obviously steaming a little bit, kept myself calm. Then I just took a simple hybrid off of there, and I still only had a 9-iron left in. It's like four. The hole is like 407 or something. Made a nice fat 9 on the first hole. Five over to start.
All right.
Five over to start. So you trying to get your brain organized around that is hard because you're just sitting there going, wow, I'm like a fighter who all of a sudden jumps into the ring and you get punched in the head four times and you're going, oh, what now? And life got fast in a hurry, got 8 over after 5. And then, you know what? I give it a B because of this. Worked a lot on the golf swing. Obviously, we talked about it on the podcast, different things over the wintertime. I made 4 bad swings all day. That was it. So after that little debacle.
And the first two of them were on the first hole.
Exactly. So after the debacle to kind of get started, got my legs back under me, was 1 over for the last 13, and I had 9 other birdie opportunities under 12 feet. So I literally could have got myself, you know, back to close to even par, despite the 9 on the first hole, had a lot of chances. So, you know, it was a good round, enjoyed myself, except for the first hole and 2 other ones, literally 9 over and 9 over on 3 holes. So just 4 bad swings all day. So I'll take it. I'll give myself a B. Obviously, so, people look at that score and go, what the hell? But I know what happened. So
there you go. Monday qualifier for Champions Tour. Not out, but where it's on pause. Where it's just on pause right now. We're still, once the border's opening up soon, you know, double vaccines, we're looking at it. I was chatting for some Corn Ferry Tour events maybe later in the year. So maybe we got to, we'll plan together. Stay tuned, folks. It's not, we're not closing the door yet on a Monday qualifier at this point.
I've got, you know what? I've got more events ahead of me this year and I think I'm more excited to actually go play. And literally, like I said, the number was terrible, but I know I know where it was and I played a lot of other good shots, probably some better, higher quality shots than I've seen in a while. Swing changes kicked in. They were great. Trust them now. Looking forward to future events.
I love it. Well, you know, I got an event coming up. We got the Flagstaff Open, and
we do. Yeah,
a week and a half here, I guess. I'm heading to Cobble Beach actually tomorrow for 3 rounds up there. So I'm trying to dial in a putter right now. I'm struggling. Oh. Like ball striking feels good. I've committed to the fade, and suddenly I'm just missing 5 footers, 4 footers. Ooh. It's killing me. So I'm trying to find a putter. So. Unfortunately, the brand new Scotty that I have that's all dialed in and sexy is coming out of the bag for a little bit. We're going back to it.
You know what the funny part is? Literally before we jumped on this podcast, I was sitting in my basement looking over at a box of clubs. There was a old Cleveland putter in there. I was like, ooh, that thing looks good. Thinking, of course, of, you know, these 9 birdie opportunities that I made a couple, but then I missed 9 other ones that I figured were, you know, I should probably made 50% of them. Grab the old putter out of there, upstairs, onto the rug, drying them out.
Oh, so
it's a never-ending cycle for all of us.
I think. All right, old Cleveland. All right, well, we'll get to our rounds next week and preview the Flagstaff Open next week. And
yeah,
maybe we'll do a full press conference of where my game's heading in. Next week's mailbag, pure questions directed to me.
I love it.
Going into the Flagstaff Open and the sea flight. I think it deserves a press conference. But before we get that, we got to hit the week that was, Scotty. Birdie, par, bogey, honorable mention. Where do you want to start? Because there was a ton of stories this week. You know what? I'm going to tell you. We're going to start on a high. Why don't you hit the birdie? Because we're right aligned on this one.
Yeah, you know what? And really, we should let you do this, Birdie, because it was a player you were talking about when not a lot of other people were. He was running hot on the European Tour, making a move kind of over here. Didn't do as well in the PGA Championship as maybe as he should have.
Made the cut.
But he did, T64 there. But I tell you what, Gary Kego is going to make some things happen, and he's certainly drawing some attention. And, you know, the fact that he's a second PGA Tour start now as a tour member is pretty damn impressive. And you'll be seeing a lot more of this guy, but certainly you can share maybe, you know, what you saw in him.
Yeah, I'm giving myself a birdie for letting you all know to watch out for this kid. And I didn't let you guys know after the second one. I remind you on that first win, I watched that entire final round of that. I guess it was his second win, but the first of this year on the European Tour. And then he won, I think, 2 weeks after. His game is dialed. This guy is a ball striker. He's always the same manner throughout the round. I've noticed you never see him too high.
Pretty calm for a 22-year-old, really.
Yeah, rocking the sunglasses, Phil there. I love it. I think it was awesome. I think he's a potential superstar in the making here. Loved his press conference after giving a bogey to Gary Player. You didn't need to make it about you. Let Garrick finish his press conference, then give him a call. I'm not getting into Gary right
let's
now.
Not. I thought we had a ban on that conversation.
I saw that clip, Scott. I was just instantly annoyed. Just instantly annoyed. Because you know he's going to take credit for it. He's going to somehow find a way to take credit for it. But I love this kid's game. I love him heading into the U.S. Open. I think it's going to be a little bright lights this week. That rough's pretty thick out there. We're going to get to that later with Mitch Theoret, Taylor Pendrith, caddy. Wow, yeah. My tongue grew a little bit.
Well, that's there. A tough one. That's a tough name. So I mean, we had to ask him to make sure what the pronunciation was before the interview. So,
but yeah, I love Higo. Watch out for him. He's now a PGA Tour member. He's going to be big. He's 22. He's got four wins right now, plus a Sunshine. Is that it? The Sunshine Tour?
Yeah, he's won the Sunshine Tour a couple times. He went on the Challenge Tour. That's how he got to the European Tour and got his status there. You know, he's also got a backstory as well. Obviously, he gave a lot of credit to his mother. You know, his father died in a car crash when he was 9. A lot of people maybe heard that story. And he said, you know, he wouldn't have been where he is now without her support. And so it's a cool story. Went to UNLV, even though he is South African. So he's fairly experienced over here, but I mean, you know, 22 and 7 credible professional wins right now among the tours, the biggest obviously being a winner now on the PGA Tour.
Yes, look out for him for years to come, I guess. I'm looking to see how he competes this week in the U.S. Open, but yeah, I think it was a good call by me to say it. I almost placed a bet on him. I saw him in there. I mean, he was handed it. Chess and Hadley just threw up on himself.
Yeah, 75 in the final round. And he said it too, how bad it was, right?
He handled it well. Give him credit. Going into the final round, he was a minus 150 to win with a 4-stroke lead. And people on Twitter were like, hammer this. Like this, like that seems almost too high, right? And glad I didn't. Glad I wasn't that guy. Can you imagine being that guy having a horrible take like that? I would never know what that's like.
Oh, no, not at all. PGA Championship. What? anyways. Yeah, I mean, you know what? If we look beyond the birdies here, you know, the par is always one we struggle with every week. But let's hear your par for the week.
Yeah, my par is actually... It's the Bryson Brook. Oh,
is that what they're called now?
Yeah, Bryson. I like that. Brook non-pairing.
All right.
I think it, I wanted to see it. I actually said on this podcast, like, I guarantee it, which basically means like, stop listening to me. But you know, it didn't happen. There's been some stories, whether they've been proven true. You know, we had one on our Instagram story and you actually told me that wasn't even true, that Brad Faxon made it up, or I don't know what happened, didn't have the truth. But I'm giving it a par because I think it would have been a great story. It probably wouldn't have brought any drama that we actually thought once it actually happened. Probably would have taken away from the actual tournament because they would have had cameras over there all the time just doing that. I think it just allows the tournament to be a golf tournament, not the the Brucen story or whatever I call it.
That's a new show on A&E, isn't it? Yeah. So yeah, and you know, you're right. I think Eamon Lynch had it right. I mean, he talked about it in a column today. You know, if there's something that's going to happen here, it has to happen organically. Trying to force it, just, you know, it just seems a little much. And on the other side of things, you know, this is the U.S. Open Championship. It's not your hit and giggle. So I mean, you need this to be a major championship. So setting it up to be a circus show of just, you know, putting them together, it just doesn't feel right. Although there's some entertainment value. This is a USGA event. It's not the PGA Tour event. Might be different if the PGA Tour was doing the setup here and obviously to get eyeballs on it. But you're right. USGA doesn't want it to have it be a distraction. And guess what? Wake me up when these guys are playing together on Saturday and Sunday and fighting for the championship. Then I'll pay attention.
Now that would
then
be sweet.
It becomes something really important to watch.
It also, it's just such an advantage. If they ever did it, there's not a single person out there, you know, getting on Brooks' case. They're just getting on Bryson the whole time. So like, and Brooks, even if it was the opposite, I just find Brooks has a better mental approach to all this in the first place. So like, I think it would just been a disadvantage to Bryson. He's their defending champion. True. They can't really do that to him right now, I don't think. There's so much, but I'll just give it a par because I would have been fine either one. And I think right now we're going to make it about the golf tournament, and I can't wait for the golf tournament. What's your par for the week?
My par for the week is actually a Canadian mention here, paying a lot of attention to the Symetra Tour, and a Canadian there who made a return this year after she had, you know, decided to retire a couple years ago. Maud-Amélie Leblanc, who's from Sherbrooke, Quebec, she had her third second place finish this year on the tour. And, you know, she was 14 under after two rounds, and it was a 3-round event. Couldn't get it done. Now, all credit to the winner who shot 500 in the final round. But you know what? It's like, I just would like to see her finish. She's super impressive. She's going to be on the LPGA Tour, back to the LPGA Tour next year. She's been on the tour before. She's got all the tools to get things done. You know, it's positive that she's having another second place finish and she's finishing high, but it's a negative that she's not breaking through and getting a win. So that's why I make it a par. You know, not sure where I sit with it, and I'm just hoping for more from her.
I give people, ladies, so much credit for grinding it out on the Symetra Tour. There's no money. It's unlike the Korn Ferry Tour, like where people on the Korn Ferry Tour is like, you know, it's hard to make money. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to make money on the Symetra Tour. And to come out of retirement to then go back to that and grind it out, now she is going to, you know, it looks like, you know, make that jump back to the LPGA. It's going to pan out. But, you know, that's it's impressive. I'm giving that a birdie, even if the finish wasn't a birdie. Like, just to do that because you believe in yourself is a whole other thing. So, yeah, I think that's a good par for the week. Looking forward to seeing her back out on the LPGA. She's got a couple more events here to lock that up, I would say.
Yeah.
We'll hit our bogeys and our honorable mention. My bogey for the week is the U.S. Open rough videos. We see it every year. Every year, there's the guy, the caddy, standing on the greens, like, look how long they're, and they huck the ball, and then they can't find it, and they're standing over it. I don't care. We know that's going to happen. The rough's long at the U.S. Open. The end. Why are we doing it again? Like, it's played out, like, 10 years ago. It was like, oh, that's crazy. I'm over it. It's a bogey. We get it. The rough's going to be long. It's Torrey Pines. You know, the rough's long around the greens. It's long everywhere. It's, you know, it's also early in the week. It's always like this early in the week. Complaints come in, they cut it down a little bit closer to the event, and then away they go. I'm just over it. It's a bogey. We don't need to see them anymore. We can assume the rough's going to be long.
Yeah, it's kind of like what you see in Torrey Pines. You're going to see paragliding videos. Like, they're going to show the paragliders going off the cliffs. I mean, I saw Golf Digest did it with Hallie Ledbetter today or whatever. I mean, it's just, so, you know, get original. Try and give us something a little extra as far as the week is concerned. You know, obviously the tour gets there for an event, you know, for the Farmers Insurance every year. Try to give us something a little extra. The rough Yeah, you know what? That might be unusual at a regular tour event, which it's, you know, always the standard kind of 4 inches. But yeah, just going back to that same thing over and over again. And you'll see the players now do it as well. I've seen amateur players who are playing at the Son of Hannah this week. They're posting all their Instagram photos of, oh, this rough is thick and, you know, thick with 12 Ks and whatever. It's the same sort of thing. Yes, you know what? It's going to be. Yeah, show me something else.
Remember when we were at Hamilton? For the Kane Open, and the rough was so thick. And I remember after that practice round, you asked me, like, what do you think is the winning score going to be? And I think I was like, I don't know, like 13, 14. Like, the rough around the green's awful. Like, there's some spots you're never going to get it. What, Rory shot, what, minus 25 or whatever to win?
Yeah.
Like, these 60. Guys are so good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. And I remember seeing some of the shots that the guys were hit out of it. And that was like, you know, I was just like, it was just lights everywhere for me, bright lights. And I would see, we get up to a ball. And I'd be like, that he's dead. Like, there's no way he gets us on the green. No, they chip it to 5 feet, 10 feet, and then they make it's so, like, they do that all the time. So, like, it doesn't matter. They're used to it. I get it's a little bit long. It's the U.S. Open, but it just feels played out. What's your bogey for the week?
Yeah, my bogey, we pretty much covered off already. It's just, you know, it's people jeering the USGA for that pairing for Bryson and Brooks and, you know, for them not making it happen. You know what? Bryson's defending, as you mentioned. These guys want to win tournaments. You know, fans want this stuff, you know, on social media. But really, in the end, you know, they don't get to choose. They are the events, and it'd be no different than pick any other sport. While we would like certain things to happen in other sports, we don't get to dictate that. We don't get to dictate the matchups in an NHL game or, you know, a lot of different things. So, you know, it's great. It makes for fun banter and everything, but, you know, people just get over it. If it's not happening, it's not happening. Move on.
What about if they got to choose? So imagine
that would be
this was a full vote. Fan full vote, and it goes on, and you literally choose the pairings, or even like opposite, the players get to choose. And it's like, so Bryson came first last year. He gets first pick of the two players he's going to pick with. And then next, and then all the way down like that. Like, you know, let's make it fun.
Well, yeah. I could see that happening for a specialized event or anything, but I think there's so many things that are getting complicated now because the fact the PGA Tour has officially betting partners and there is so much betting and things that are going on now. You know, a lot of those things could influence the outcomes of that. So, you know, that plays into it as well. But yeah, that would be fun to see an event where it's purely voting. And we're seeing like small tours that will do, you know, Instagram poll of pick the pin position and, you know, they'll offer up some options and people will pick out pin position. That type of involvement, pretty cool. If they could do that or be willing to do that, maybe it would happen at a Korn Ferry Tour event, but I just don't know if that would happen at the PGA Tour level, just because, you know, you're involving millions of dollars here, you're involving the sponsors, and if something goes sideways and you tick off the sponsor, I mean, you'd have to get their approval on that as well. So but that could make for some really cool entertainment, that's for sure.
You mentioned small tour events, just real quickly on this. These are still professional golf events. I want to point that out. When you see, you know, whether it's the East Coast,
East Coast Professional Tour.
Yeah, or the Toronto Players Tour, whatever. I saw a two-day event where the last place in a, like, under 20-man field was 53 strokes behind first place. You're not a professional. Stop wasting people's time. This is a pro tour, right? It's just like people don't get it. They think, oh, I broke par once, I can go play out there. Yeah. We have a good friend of mine, right? He's a plus five handicap, just broke the course record at a very private club in this area. Shot a 60. This guy's an amateur and he's unsure if he can go play professional golf because he's smart, right? If you're a vanity scratch golfer, you know, pro golf isn't for you. Move on. I just need to get that off my chest.
Yeah. I think the thing that comes into play for a lot of those minor tours is that, you know, it's the same. It's always the same, been the same for mini tours. They need a certain amount of donors.
Fair. They're not going to deny you, for the record. Yeah.
No, to support the event and support the purse. It would be nice to see full quality of field in there, but, you know, you'd think it'd be a wake up call for someone to do that. And maybe they wouldn't show up and sign up for more events. Yeah. That's when it becomes even more unusual, is when they start signing up for more tour events, but hey, I guess unless they're told they can't play it, they'll probably still keep signing up.
For sure. Why I thought about this is actually to my honorable mention. And it's the story everyone's heard about. It's this I'm giving a DQ to Luke Smith, who got DQ'd at the Monday qualifier for the Korn Ferry Tour event. And why, like, it's not even, I mean, it's all of this, the fact that, you know, and you need to go on the Fire Pit Collective. You need to read Ryan French's story on it. It's hilarious. It's amazing. Ryan took the wrong Monday off. Let's say that he should have been on site. He should have had live interviews. I'm surprised he didn't get a private jet in to get these live interviews. But the story basically goes is Luke Smith is in this group with a couple other guys. Something happened where the ball went left. His dad made a comment, who was caddying for him, like, you know, hit it straight and then we won't look for the balls. And then all of a sudden the son jumped on his playing partner and assaulted him. And the other guy's trying to break it up. And the dad's standing over top of the two of them with a putter being like, don't come near here. Like, I'll hit you with it. Like, and I posted a photo of this guy on our Instagram account. And he looks like the guy that would do him. The reason I'm actually giving it a DQ is this kid plays at the University of Tennessee something, not even the actual one, another one. University of Tennessee Martin. He in college has an average score of over 75.
Yeah.
You do not go to a Monday qualifier at it with an average score of 75 for the Korn Ferry Tour. And the fact that his dad thought he should be there, he can have a DQ. They're not going to be invited back at this point. I'm sure they're banned for a long time for this. Just insanity. But that's what made me think about it, is like, there's a difference. You play college golf, that's not good enough to play professional golf at this level. It's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing, a pure lack of self-awareness and just a loser dad overall.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, I see people all the time. I see profiles of people, and we've talked about it before, but, you know, I saw one recently, this person who, you know, obviously claims that they're a professional golfer and they're an Instagram influencer. Then you go and check out their record and, you know, they played 5 pro events and they broke 80 once. And, you know, for a touring professional, this is different. This is not club pros that are not touching a club for a while and going out and batting it around. These are people who are... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, these are people touting themselves as a touring professional or a future touring professional. I get it. Take your shot, get your experience and whatever, but be prepared that it's a whole different world when you get out there. Like you said, you know, a friend of ours shooting, you know, 10 under par, he's doubting himself and doubted himself as far as whether he'd go pro. There's lots of other ones that are like that. So, you know, you just always have to consider that there's always somebody better and that the best players in the world are really, really good. And the players that are playing in the minor tournaments are still really, really good.
You're right. Why don't we finish it with a positive? Then let's head to Torrey Pines and chat with Mitch.
Yeah, just I'll throw my honorable mention out there. Matilda Kastrin won the Metahiel in the LPGA. First win by a player from Finland, which was great. She went to Florida State University, and it just so happened that one of her teammates, Morgan Mitro, who works with a previous guest of ours, Mitch Sadowski, she won on the Futures Tour as well. So a nice little finish there. It's always good to see players emerging and coming up on the tour and, you know, just players getting introduced, just like Garrett Higo. You know, we need the new blood to come in there and push the game along. That's always important. We can't always depend on Phil Mickelson to pull out more PGA championships.
I mean, I don't know how we made it this far without even mentioning Alice Hewson, who finished third in that the Scandinavian mixed event on the European Tour. That was awesome, by the way. Mm. I don't know if you watched much. I was up pretty early on Sunday hanging out with the kid. I loved it. I want more of that. We need an LPGA, PGA mixed event at some point. And I loved it. It was mixed, but it was individual. Not mixed teams, nothing. We've seen that before. It doesn't bring the views. Get it right. They built it so perfectly. Obviously, there was a lot of men at the top and not very many women, but hey, the talent level out in the European ladies tour is a little bit different than the LPGA, right? That's the peak is the LPGA. So I want to see more of this. Shout out to Alice Hewson, finished 2 back, was just awesome to see. And that mixed event, I want to see those more.
Yeah, I'll say a couple points related to that. One, our PGA of Ottawa tour that we're involved with is actually an integrated tour. So the women that play off 87% of the distance if they want to play the event. They all play in the same category. The other thing was actually a bogey that I had thought about and I forgot about, which prompts me when you, as far as the mixed event, Sophie Walker, who was a former player, was doing commentating on that. I was a little irritated with her actually, because she spent more time pointing out the differences between the men and the women rather than the similarities, which I thought, you know, for an event that was supposed to be pushing equality, I thought that was a little off for that. And also, you know, there's some things that she actually presented that weren't even factual. She actually discussed at one point, she's like, oh, the women don't get as much spin in the sand because they don't have as much speed in the sand. So, you know, and she's trying to point out these differences, and I'm like, it's a sand shot. We're not talking about a drive here, you know, 125 mile an hour swing versus 105 miles an hour. I guarantee you they can probably create pretty close to the same amount of speed with a sand wedge and create the spin. So I was a little disappointed with that, especially given the nature of the event and what it was about. I think it should have focused more on the fact of, you know what, there are a lot more similarities than there are differences, and continually pointing out the differences. And when I say continually, I mean, in a series of two or three holes, you know, she probably said it six or seven times. Oh, well, the men do this and the women do this. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What are we doing here? This is not what the intent is supposed to be.
Tough luck. Tough luck. You know what? Sure. I got one more bogey. One more bogey. Right. We got a grievance to air. Our audio engineer, our producer, came to Kingston today and played golf and didn't let either of us know. Yeah. He's out there playing at Emerson. Neither of us knew. We have a full set of clubs here for him to give. No, we don't. But you, I sent him a let him know, you know, hey, they got this. It's in our Dropbox. He sends me a photo of Amersum, and I was like, oh, cool, thanks. And he only had three people. He could have easily invited one of us. So I gave him a hard time. But good news, you know, we saw the Glorious Sons are announcing. Mm-hmm. They're announcing events. I'm seeing concerts being announced in Canada for late this year. The world's coming back. It's coming back. So we'll let him off the hook. But
this time.
One of those three Toronto dates, though. There might be some knocking for some tickets there.
Brendan. The refurbished Massey Hall in March will be
going to
look
awesome. Can't wait. Yeah. All right. Why don't we head to Torrey Pines? We got Mitch Theoret, caddy for Taylor Pendrith, on. Talks about what we can expect this week and more. But before we do, a quick message from our episode sponsor.
At Ping, our culture of curiosity has been driving innovations for over 60 years. Innovations like the new G425 iron, which brings you greater distance without sacrificing the forgiveness and control you need to play with precision. And with free access to the Arcos Caddy system, you'll play smarter and shoot lower scores. The new Ping G425 iron, better by every measure. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right, folks, we'd like to welcome to the podcast our caddy on the grounds this week at the U.S. Open, Mitch Theoret, the caddy for Taylor Pendrith. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's get right into Torrey Pines. You've been on the grounds for a little while now. What are your thoughts on the course this week and your second U.S. Open?
I mean, it's different from the first one. That's for sure. When you get on the course, you can't really get over how much longer it is and how, you know, how long the course is playing, especially, you know, right next to the ocean. But the fairways are tight, just like every other US Open. It's starting to get firm and fast out there. But some of that rough, especially around the greens, is nasty. I mean, you get some lies that you never see ever on any other golf course. So should be a good test. You know, you're gonna need to play really well to have a chance to win, also a little bit of luck, but I'm excited to get going.
What percentage of time are you guys spending hitting golf balls out of that rough versus, you know, just standard shots out of the fairway?
I mean, we probably spent a good hour after we played yesterday just around the chipping green hitting shots out of awful lies, you know, short-sighted, you know, just you gotta prepare for the unexpected out there, and that's what's gonna happen. You're gonna get yourself in some positions where you know, you might be in a good spot, but you're just going to have a terrible lie. So you just got to deal with it.
Has Taylor made any adjustments this week as far as equipment to deal with that, or just going with the standard bag?
Nothing so far. We were talking about maybe putting a high toe wedge in there for those terrible lies. And we have a 7-wood in the bag that we used at Torrey Pines. It makes it a lot easier getting out of the rough to get some extra distance as opposed to hitting some sort of wedge. But we haven't really finalized anything, and I guess we'll take the next 2 days to just sort of see what we feel like will work best.
How often are you kind of helping him on shot decisions around the green like that? It's pretty rare to see it, but on a week like this, is there more prep or more talks between the two of you? Best shot selection coming out of those for chips?
I think for these guys up here, I mean, they've seen it all, and they're so confident with, you know, what they do best and what they don't. So there's not much to discuss around that. For us, it's more, you know, when we're hitting into the greens, is where do we want to be, you know, in case we do miss our target, which happens. I mean, golf's not a perfect game. So really it's for us, it's about putting ourselves in the best position to, you know, avoid having to have those chips or, you know, short sided shots. And then, you know, rely on your putting, you know, sometimes staying at 30 feet is better than hitting, you know, 5 feet long past the green. So, you know, that's the main point of our focus is, you know, is our strategic planning of, you know, how we're going to get around this golf course.
So what's your preparation been like knowing that, you know, we can't be missing too much off the green just because of the rough? Have you changed your preparation for the week? And what did you learn from last year's US Open to help you better prepare for the week?
I think it's just, you know, you really got to dial in what pins and, you know, what holes you can, you know, you try to take advantage of when you get a, you know, a good ball off the tee, you know, as opposed to the Korn Ferry Tour where, you know, it's let's go out there and play aggressive and we got to make a lot of birdies. Here's a lot of pars, which is a change from what we're used to. But, you know, there's, like I said before, there's going to be holes where, you know, you get one in the fairway and you're going to have to, you know, go at it a little bit and try to give yourself a good look. But then there's other holes where, you know, hitting it to the middle of the green and just putting away at the corners is what you're going to have to do.
So how many holes actually out there do you guys figure are birdie holes versus ones that, you know, you're just happy with a par and move on?
I think it really depends on where your ball ends up off the tee. I mean, the par fives here are good par fives, but with his length, I mean, I feel like he can get home in two or get pretty close to home in two. And a lot of those par fives, especially on the back, there's a couple greenside bunkers or, you know, just off the green. If you're on the fat side of the green, it's a good spot to be. So for us, it'll be, you know, get one in the fairway on those holes. And then if we have a number we like, we'll go at it. If not, hit something down there and, you know, and get a wedge in and try to get something within 15 feet for a birdie look.
I love it. Where between you and Taylor, where do you often disagree out there? What are you almost either trying to hold him back from or maybe go for a little bit more? Is there something that, you know, where you find you're getting a little bit more in there with your voice than other situations?
I mean, I've grown up with him and I know his game, you know, so well just from seeing him playing and playing with him all these years that we're almost always on the same page. You know, there's certain times where there's a drivable par four where, you know, it's not really an advantage to go at it. But I know he's very quick to recognize, especially when it comes to where the pin is on that green, that, you know, this isn't the time to, you know, try to go for it. But for the most part, you know, it's pretty smooth sailing out there with all the work that we do Monday through Wednesday, that when we get to the hole and we know where the pin is, we know exactly what we're going to do.
I love it. Now, you mentioned growing up with them. You literally grew up on the golf course together, right? You came out and you were caddying for him when he was out on the McKenzie Tour, you know, basically grinding it out. We talked about it a long time ago, you know, eating out of gas stations. Just talk about that for us, you know, the growth of like caddying on the McKenzie Tour to the Korn Ferry Tour. And now you're at obviously the pinnacle and set to go there in the next year round. How have you grown as a caddy over those years and just the caddy experience in general?
I think back to that first event I did from probably almost 3 years ago in Windsor, And I'd never caddied before at anything really. And I mean, we were still using rangefinders on the Mackenzie Tour. So, I mean, when I first came out to the Korn Ferry Tour, I had to learn how to get a number out of the book. And, you know, I picked it, that was pretty easy to pick up once you start doing it. And I think the big thing that changed between back then and now is the preparation work. You know, there's so much back then, you know, you're playing those courses up in Canada that, you know, they're not super challenging, and you can sort of get away with like being in the wrong positions. The greens aren't super fast and firm, but out here, you know, those mistakes are magnified, especially at the US Open. And, you know, I think the preparation work and the, you know, all the little details, are what I've picked up the fastest.
And what are those details that are extra maybe for this week that, you know, versus a standard week on the Korn Ferry Tour?
I think it's all about, you know, it's all about missing in the right spots. I mean, you can miss the green out here and really on any course, and, you know, getting up and down for par is, you know, you have a really good chance. Whereas, you know, if you miss in the wrong spots, you're going to hit it to 30, 40 feet out here. And, you know, you're, with the way these greens are and how fast they're going to be and the amount of slope on them, you're going to be really trying to two putt it. That's the big thing is, you know, the rough out here is thick, especially around the greens. I mean, you can get some good lines. It's kind of spotty in around the fairways. You know, you're going to get some bad ones, but you can get some perfect lies out here on the rough off the fairway. So it's all about, it's all about being around those greens and, you know, giving yourself the best chance to, you know, get a look at birdie or, you know, make a two putt for a par or get up and down for par.
And what do those practice rounds look like? I mean, who have you guys been playing with and kind of what is everyone talking about, you know, first of all, about the golf course? Is there particular characteristics besides the rough that they're talking about?
Well, this is my first time here, but we played with Corey Connors. So they seem to, you know, move some tee boxes around. They have that converted par five into par four this year, which is, you know, he was saying even back when they played it was a long par five, and now it's an even longer par four. But for guys like Taylor with his length off the tee, you know, that doesn't seem to be as big of a factor. Usually we're used to hitting, you know, wedges and nine irons in the par fours, but, you know, there's a couple where he's going to have to hit an eight or a seven iron, which changes things a little bit. But I mean, the course is great. Those holes, especially along the cliffs there, along the ocean, are super scenic. And, you know, coming to a place like this, you just try to soak everything in, and, you know, it's a major, right? So you got to be on your toes. You got to be ready for the unexpected, and, you know, and just try to have fun with it.
Well, you're going to have that more often as, you know, you are graduating from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour. Thinking back to those 3 years ago when you were still shooting with rangefinders, now you're heading to the PGA Tour. Obviously, you knew Taylor's talent, but did you actually ever think about what that was going to be like? And how hard is it for you right now not to look ahead to the PGA Tour and not only the tour atmosphere and how everything's better, but the tour paychecks on top of all of that?
It's kind of hard to believe how fast it's really come. I mean, I came to San Diego a few years ago with some friends on a bachelor party, and we played the North Course here at Torrey Pines. And I was in the gift shop and I bought a bunch of US Open stuff thinking, oh, this is sweet. You know, the US Open's coming here in a few years. And little did I know that I went to the merchandise shop yesterday and they're selling the same stuff that I had already bought 2 years ago. So, I mean, it's awesome. I definitely, you know, 3 years ago, thinking back, would I have ever caddied in a major? I would have definitely thought no. Let alone, you know, locking up a PGA Tour card and being full-time in the PGA Tour next year is incredible. And, you know, it goes a lot to Taylor. I mean, he's put in so much work over the past how many years of playing professional golf and, you know, being knocked down with injuries, and, you know, he never gave up. And, you know, that's a real testament to, you know, how bad he wants it. And I couldn't be happier for him.
Well, it looks like you guys have a late early. Any concerns with that as far as the tee times are concerned, or does it really matter for you guys?
It doesn't really matter. We actually prefer those, you know, first off Whether it's Thursday or Friday, I think we're first off on Friday, I believe.
Yeah, it looks that way.
12:30 and 6:30. I mean, it's nice. You get out there, you know, you try to put together a good round on Thursday in the afternoon, and then you get the fresh greens and, you know, everything's sort of calmer in the morning on Friday. So it gives you a chance to get out there ahead of everyone and, you know, play well. And then you sort of just sit back and watch the rest of the day unfold and hope you've put yourself in a good enough position to make the cut and, you know, and hopefully even better than that. But I think I really don't think it matters what tee time you get or who you're playing with out here. It's all about, you know, how you play and how you perform and, you know, and you just sort of sit back and enjoy it.
Well, I mean, the true caddy in you would be looking at the beach come Friday afternoon. What spots have you started seeking out? Any advice from other caddies of where to go to spend that Friday afternoon once you're done the golf course? And don't tell me you haven't. You got something in your back pocket.
I mean, being here a few years ago, you know, you go down towards, it's only about a 20-minute drive. You go down to Mission Beach area, and it's super nice down there. So I might take a drive down there, depending on how the first 2 days go. But I think I'll probably be sleeping most of the afternoon, and I'll wake up and check the scores and see how we're looking. But, you know, Monday through Sunday for me is pretty business. And, you know, and I think we got a late Sunday flight going back to Maine for the Korn Ferry Tour event. So, I mean, I'm going to soak it all in, and, you know, especially around the golf course and on property, and, you know, anything else that comes as an extra added bonus.
Well, obviously, you know, you're busy at work, so you're not getting a lot of opportunity to maybe get out and play some golf for yourself. But why don't you sort of tell people a little bit maybe about your game and also, you know, from your hockey side of it and your experience, both in the OHL and as a pro, how does your experiences, you know, as a sportsman, as we'll say, how do you think that helps you as a caddy?
I think it benefits quite a bit. I mean, some of these guys that have just been caddies or have never played another elite level of sport, they don't realize, you know, what it takes away from the golf course to, you know, to be at that level, you know, sort of the behind the scenes preparation and just your mental fortitude of, you know, the grind of every day in and out every day, what it takes. So I think, you know, I can draw on those experiences of, you know, what it's like to be down in the nitty gritty, especially, you know, when it comes down on Sunday and you're, you know, in the hunt, you know, those emotions, how you can sort of keep them in check and, you know, not get too carried away out there. And I mean, the hockey time was great. This time I spent playing hockey was amazing. I played hockey, I mean, since I was 3 years old until I was 26 and had the chance to go over and play in Europe for a few years and see the world. And, yeah, I'm very grateful and very fortunate for those opportunities that came my way.
Well, you're seeing a lot more of the world now, and you're going to be seeing a lot more of the world on the PGA Tour next year. We'll get one last thought. We do a lot of betting on this podcast. We want your prediction of what you think the final score, the winning score this week is going to be.
I mean, that's tough because last year I didn't see anyone really taking it. I think what was a Bryson shot 6 under.
Yeah.
Six. I didn't see anyone taking it that low. But then I guess, I mean, a lot of guys shot under par on Thursday, which I thought was crazy. I can see the winner being, I could see someone shooting 4 or 5. I mean, it's tough out there. But, you know, someone's going to take it low one day. Someone's going to shoot 4 under one day. It's just inevitable with how good these guys are out here. But I also think that, you know, if you shoot even par, 1 under, 1 over, I mean, you're putting yourself in a really good spot to play on the weekend and, you know, even have a chance coming down the stretch.
Well, we're hoping it's you guys. Obviously, we're a big fan of Taylor, big fan of yourself. Enjoy the final practice round as you head out with the fellow Canadians this afternoon. You guys got a practice round tomorrow. Well, either way, enjoy the week. It's come a long way from buying gear in the pro shop to now actually caddying in the U.S. Open. We're rooting for you, and enjoy the week and go low.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
All right, Mitch, thank you for that interview. Always nice. Taylor actually set that up for us. I was letting him know he's a great caddy agent. If this golf thing doesn't work out, it's always good to have a backup plan, Taylor. And he didn't respond. Nice. As per usual, with every major, every tournament, we usually pick a couple guys. But every major, we do a draft, and it's the most amount of money that is made during the week. The winner wins a bottle of wine. Now, I owe you a bottle of wine. You owe me a bottle of scotch.
Correct.
So this is like your tab. I might have to send some guys out, some of my bookie security, to start paying the tab if I win again this week, even though we're kind of 1-1. I don't know where I'm going.
I don't know either. I was trying to figure that out.
you know, when you owe a bookie too much money, a guy
I get that part, but it's not like I'm down much here.
So I'm going to go off the board. So I used to work at a casino, right? I think I've watched this podcast. He'd be a dealer at a casino. And my old boss used to run one of the ones out in Alberta back when they were like privatized.
Right.
And this lady that used to gamble at the casino a lot had a big debt with the casino, and she hadn't paid it, and they kept warning her she had to pay it. But one day she gets in the mail a finger, and they caught her son and cut off his finger and sent it to her. And he said stuff like that was happening all the time. And
I figure they just send Nickelback to her house to sing on the front doorstep, and that would like force her to pay, you know? And, like,
watch out. Nickelback's kind of, like, people are kind of on both sides. Before it was like everyone hated them, but I don't know. Maybe it's just people trying to be ironic, but people are getting offended by Nickelback jokes. I don't know why, but
I don't know either. Yeah,
just a fun fact about casinos out in Alberta. Maybe other people have stories about that. I'm sure there's many. He had 100 stories, stuff like that.
I bet.
Things, you know, the wild, wild west back in Alberta. But why don't we hit the draft? We're going to each pick three players and then a fourth player that has, let's go 200-1 odds.
All right.
This week. Yeah. I guess I'll let you go first. And three players, 200-1 odd, and we'll go from there. How's that sound?
All right, sounds good. I'm going to start with Tony Finau, believe it or not.
25. You really, just quickly, I need to cut you off.
Yeah.
You really go like too early on people. I'm glad you didn't take Cameron Champ. Mm-hmm. Let's say that.
Stop.
Like, go on, Tony Finau. He's due, but go on with your thoughts.
Yeah, I just looked at how he played at Wingfoot. He was T8 there. He's sort of got a renewed focus a little bit on some different aspects of his game. I think he's somewhat on form. And, it's a West Coast. He's a Utah guy, but, you know, it's a West Coast vibe, and he's a SoCal feel sort of guy. He's got, you know, the flat bill, he's rocking the high tops, the whole deal. I think he's going to love his time at Torrey Pines. So 25-1, I think that's decent value there. And I don't think anybody would be upset to see it happen.
No, but the Puerto Rico curse can't.
Like, yeah, of course. Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to ignore that.
It's
just
not being broken. It's just not. I mean, no. I saw like now it's on American soil. Like if you win in Puerto Rico, like because Hovland won in Mexico, right? He didn't actually win in America. So the curse continues after Chesson Hadley just couldn't get it done. All right, you're talking about SoCal. I mean, I'm going local boy. I'm going Xander, first pick.
I looked at that one for sure.
This guy's added the arm lock and then came out and said it should be banned, even though he's in the top five in putting on the tour, which I actually agree with him. I love it. It's like, hey, if it's helping, I'm going to use it. He's going to win a major at some point. So
yeah,
I think...
Would you have him at? Because I see he's moved a fair bit today, for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are throwing money on him now. So yeah. He was in the 20s. He's down to 19-1 from a odds standpoint, if you're looking to bet on him to win outright. So
yeah, I got a couple that have actually dropped him to 10-1 now. And actually, Finau has moved from 25-1 to as little as 14-1 on Bet365. So yeah,
I hate those odds. Those are awful.
I know. But I mean, I'm looking across the board on about 15 different books, and certainly they're on the move for sure.
All right, you got your next pick.
Yeah, actually, this one might surprise you, but I'll explain my logic behind it. I'm going to take Louis Oosthuizen, believe it or not.
Big game.
Yeah, big game. Obviously a major winner. Most people will don't understand why I'll take him, but look back at Wingfoot. He actually finished third there. So he might not be the biggest.
The guy drives it dead straight.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
Until he hits 18 at where was that, New Orleans?
Yeah, it's in Louisiana. Yeah, I know. Yeah, which is unfortunate. And hopefully he's got that little right miss. He's got rid of that because obviously he had that same situation happen at Kiowa as well. But he was in the mix at the PGA. Mm-hmm. So I think from a big game perspective, he's a guy who can handle the pressure a little bit in the majors. You know, obviously 1-1, but I think his advantage there is, like you said, at Torrey, you know, he can hit a lot of fairways. And while he doesn't hit it the longest, he's a smart guy, stays calm. You got to keep your head about yourself, especially at a U.S. Open. So I think Louis is solid for that that pick.
I don't know where to go here. I am really stuck between two guys, and they're the two best odds right now, yeah. And John Rahm and Dustin Johnson. I'm having a hard time believing the narrative of John Rahm plays amazing at Torrey Pines. He's coming out for blood, blah, 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 after that whole thing. I don't know. It's too much. It's almost too much pressure. So I'm going DJ. I thought his game looked good up until, you know, 54, 58 holes or whatever it was of the tournament last week. Looks good, feels good, coming in high. Why not DJ? Why not DJ for his second U.S. Open?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he played well at Palmetto, short of a few holes, but you know, he's obviously got some momentum there. So, you know, and he's won a U.S. Open before, so certainly can't go away from that. I'm going to pick my steady guy, and I really like him from a money standpoint. And you know, 11-1 showing up a lot of places. Colin Morikawa, I just keep going back to this guy. Yeah. He just hits it too well. And the thing is, if you're chasing a draft and you want somebody who's steady, who's going to, you know, make you some money, you just can't go away from him. You know, am I saying he's gonna win? No, not necessarily, but he certainly could be in the mix. He's very familiar with the golf course, so that's helpful as well. And he's just too good to ignore.
Yeah, I hate my next pick, but it's basically the same thought of in US Opens, this guy shows up and shows up well. And it's Matt Wolf. No, I'm just kidding. funny though, Matt Wolf is in the field because he was second last year.
It's crazy. And
1 year ago,
I looked at that today. I'm like, and then what happened? He just fell off the earth.
I'm gonna give it a month and then come back to me. I have this. I've done very loose research on it, aka never left my brain, of a comparison of him and Smiley Kaufman right now in the early stages here of that. But my third pick is actually a pick I do hate, and it's Patrick Reed. But the reason I am taking it is just U.S. Opens, tough, rough. He's going to fluff it around in there. He's going to get better lies, and he's going to finish. He'll probably top 10. He's just always around. So I got to go Patrick Reed for my third pick. All right, who's your 200-1 odds?
You know, that was a tough one with this one. There's certainly a lot of players that you'd pick right away that, bam, they don't have any chance at all. But you know what? I'm going to have to go with our guest this week's boss, who's going at 500-1 on a few spots. I mean, value. This is a guy who's T23 at Wingfoot. Just the game style, having that experience of playing the U.S. Open, I think Taylor Pendrith can do something really good this week. And I think at those odds, I don't think you can shy away from it.
No, I think you got to sprinkle a couple bucks regardless on that. But, you know, my thought with Taylor, he's not coming in at the same peak he was last year at the US Open. Sure. That guy finished second every single week last year in the Korn Ferry Tour heading in the US Open. Not at his peak, but I think he probably would never admit it. I think he's looking ahead at this point, and he's just kind of going through the motions a little bit out on the Korn Ferry Tour, waiting for his starts on the PGA Tour. So I think the focus is there. You heard it in Mitch. You know, didn't you pick up on how hockey player Mitch was in so much of his answers?
So
this guy's been trained by the OHL on how not, what not to say.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, we're gonna get balls in deep. We're gonna get in the hole as soon as we can, and you know, play for par and hope for birdie. You know, like it's just pretty
pure media, training, but you know, great guy, and it was nice to get his commentary for sure.
For sure, I'm actually gonna go with Erik van Rooyen at 226-1. I don't get this one at all. Why is it so high? This guy's been playing good. He played good last week. He was playing well for a bit at the PGA before destroying a few things.
Well, that's probably why people are not throwing shekels on him. They're probably thinking that tampers their image of him and thinking that maybe, you know, maybe he's not as good as he is. But, you know, I think that's great value.
Yeah, I think it's great value as well. So I really like Ben Ruin. All right, that's our draft. Playing for another bottle of wine, Scotty. Got my eyes on a Caymus Zinfandel. I've been looking for one of those. So maybe I'll cop out of the scotch and we'll figure something out there if I do.
All right. A little trade.
All right. Why don't we've done this before. A little storyline we want to happen and versus a storyline we do not want to happen. Absolutely. So we're each going to break down a quick storyline. We're really hoping to see at the end of the week what we're going to be talking about. And maybe what we'll do is we'll write the headline. So you got to give us the headline, Scotty, of the story you want to happen coming at the end of the U.S. Open.
I might be too strung out on compliments, overdosed on confidence.
All right, Scotty, it's time for headlines. It's a new segment I just made up right now. And we were not prepared for it, but we got an intro music. You heard Drake off the top. I hope he doesn't sue us. What is the story, the headline you want to see come Monday morning?
San Diego Dreamin', which is going to be Phil Mickelson, does the impossible and wins at Torrey Pines and wins the U.S. Open. That's the dream scenario, the one that will blow the cover off of everything.
That. You know what? I can't argue against it, but it's not good for my best bets.
No, probably not.
In a moment. That is, I did not even think that was coming. I did not see that as a storyline that you were going to throw out there. But how is that not the biggest story? That has to be. That's the biggest possible story we could come out of this week with. And you absolutely knocked it out of the park. I love that. All right. My storyline is Brooks beats down Bryson yet again and wins his third U.S. Open. These two get paired together on Sunday. Bryson can't handle the noise, and Brooks just lets him go down. And Brooks moves up to his fifth major, and it's like, where does this guy stand all time? Because that puts you in a whole other category. I think that both of those stories give us a ton of content for next week that we won't even need a week that was. We'll just talk about that.
Yeah, you know what? That's quality right there. Again, if that happens, certainly there'll be a lot of chatter and there'll be a lot of eyeballs on that tournament.
All right, Scotty. Headlines come Monday. This headline, you do not want to hear it. What is the headline that you hear?
Oh, a headline that I would hear. Let's say Bryson bashes way to second U.S. Open victory.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair one. I don't think anybody wants to. I just want what I want. If that is the case, I just don't want it to be last year. Last year was the most boring U.S. Open ever because no one was hitting fairways. No one had a shot. It was who could hit furthest, who could hit closest, and then it's a putt off. And hey, he won. He won that way. He was the best for putting. Sure. Yeah. But I agree with you. I think if it's that, if he wins it in a good fashion and he's, you know, making it interesting, that's one thing. But if it's just, hey, the rough is the storyline, that's the last thing.
I would look at it for the sake of maybe, you know what, he gets his driving on point, starts hitting a lot of fairways and hitting it way down the fairway. And, you know, kind of a John Daly-esque style from 1991 at Crooked Stick and making some things happen that way. And, you know, if that happens, then it certainly could be quite the show. But if it's just a bomb and gouge and chop and make a bunch of pars, then that maybe won't be quite as exciting.
Not even the longest guy in the field this week.
No, not at all.
We got Wilco's out in the field this week. So he might be bashing it past Bryce and making him look small. All right. The storyline I do not want to happen come Monday is Phil. No, I'm just kidding. though I drafted him, I can't have Patrick Reed be a two-time major winner.
I thought about that one.
And if I see Patrick Reed U.S. Open hero, or U.S. hero, anything? What do they call him at the Ryder Cup? You know, like
Captain America.
Captain America wins the U.S. Open. Anything along that line,
yeah,
I'm gonna puke. It's gonna be awful. Even though if it's gonna win me a bottle of wine, I'd rather pour out. I'd pour it out. I just, you know, I can't have that. I think both of those are hateable. Do you got a second one? Just like deep down, like I've just won. Maybe it's not as hateable, but just like, that won't do it for me.
I don't know if I do or not. I mean, I'm going through and looking, and obviously there could be some weird scenarios or whatever, but you know, I think the one I don't want to happen is all of a sudden have somebody who's, you know, totally unexpected. That would be different if it's like Garrick Higo, but if Johannes Veerman wins the
Ryo Ishikawa picks up a US Open.
Yeah, well, that could be, we might be talking about him in a minute. But if something like that happens, or, you know, Tyler Strafacki, who is the US amateur champion, gets, you know, 5 slow play penalties, but still wins. Yeah, there could be some weird scenarios for sure.
All right. Why don't we hit our best bets just quickly? We did this last time. We each gave 5. We're going to give 3 this time. I actually broke it down. If you bet a unit, whatever you're, and for people that know what a unit is, if your usual bet's $10, that's one of your units. If you had bet $10 on all 10 of our picks last time, you would have made money. You would have made money because Scotty gave you some really good bets that he got right. And they had some good odds.
Not guaranteeing any this week, that's for sure.
Oh, he had some good odds. So just saying, you would have made money. I'm not guaranteeing you anything right now, but we're going to give you 3 each, and we'll see if you make any money this week. So, Scotty, what are your 3 best bets for the week?
I'm going to start out with Xander Schauffele, 17-4 for a top 5.
Damn, that's good. I like that, yeah. Xander's coming in hot. Obviously, my first pick.
Yeah,
hometown. Exactly. Why not?
Yeah, for a top 5, I mean, I think there's something there. There's certainly something to sprinkle on, and to know at least that coming down the stretch there, if you're not going to get the winner, he's a guy who could definitely either go from the front and drop to top 5 or sneak in backdoor and get a top 5.
Rory McIlroy backdoor. All right.
Exactly.
You got that as your first. My first is going to be Taylor Pendrith with a top 10 at 34-1. Ooh. I know it's crazy, but 34-1, I had to sprinkle there. I don't know how you don't. I know you're like homer pick. No, like this guy's a big player.
No, not at all.
He's looking for it. He hits it deep. He's coming in, I think, you know, as I mentioned, you know, not as at his peak, but I think that's actually helping the odds here. This guy almost top 20 last year. Top 10, 34-1. And you're getting 17-1 on a top 20. So I would sprinkle on both. And I have.
There we go. Next one up, top American, Webb Simpson, 30-1.
I like that pick, Scott. Yeah.
Giant killer.
I like that pick.
He is consistently a giant killer, a previous U.S. Open champion, won an Olympic in 2012. He knows how to get it done in this tournament, even though it was 9 years ago. But again, you know, he's the guy all of a sudden that, you know, he's a smiling assassin. We've seen him many times sneak into a tournament and work his way to the top, and you don't even know he's there. But to be the top American, especially since there's a lot of international players in this field, at 30-1, that's great, great value.
Enjoy the drunk tank, pal.
Exactly.
I love that pick. I'll be dabbling on that. I like both your picks very early here, Scotty.
Nice.
Mine, if we're going top, I'm going top Asian, Sungjae. At 4-1.
Mm.
I think people have Hideki right there with like way too good of odds. 4-1, it might be small. You don't have to hit home runs on every bet you make. And Sungjae's got the ball striking to get it done. The putter shows up. Why can't it be Sungjae come Sunday to be top Asian? I'm not saying he's going to win.
No.
Same top Asian. So what's your third pick, Scotty?
Yeah, well, I'm digging through and trying to find someone. I think we look at some of the players to miss the cut. You know, trying to think of players and playing this golf course. You know, I like a guy like, you know, Ryo Ishikawa.
He's, but you're getting what? You're getting like always, $1 on your $100.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think he's 17-4. He's 4-11. But I don't think that's bad as far as, actually, that has changed. This is just
what,
in.
What news did they get on him that he's going
to? He's going for 2-1 now to miss the cut. So, you know what? I'm sticking with that one.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going back to the well. I don't know why he's getting better odds to miss the cut than, or worse odds, basically the same than,
yeah,
than Rio there. Phil Mickelson to miss the cut at the US Open. Oh, I got to go back to it.
Oh God.
The rough is long. He's got that. He's playing a TaylorMade wood this week. It's been like, he's out there. He doesn't even have it covered this week. I saw it. That two.
Well, he had his old one. That
he's got the new one now, right?
Yeah, now he's got the mini driver. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just don't see it. I know it's his backyard, but you can't, you know,
we're
you
having deja vu.
Yeah, you can't get struck by lightning twice. And you know what? If he wins, I'll tell you this. I won't make another bet on this podcast.
All right.
If he wins, you know what? If he wins, I'll say this. I won't even come on next week. You can come on with another guest and you guys can just talk smack about me. I'll be here. I'll introduce and I'll just sit here. You can just rip into me for the whole first segment about how I should never make any bets. I don't know what I'm talking about if he wins, but I just don't see him making the cut this week.
There we go.
All right. Why don't we take a break? We'll hit a message from our sponsor and then we'll come back with the mailbag.
At Ping, we're an engineering company. Success is measured in the lab and on your scorecard. We focus on results, your results. In the G425 Max driver, that means more time in the fairway, less time in the rough. It means longer drives, shorter approach shots, and fewer putts. The new G425 drivers, taking MOI to the max. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right, Scotty, mailbags in. We usually do U.S. Open only or major only this week. We've dropped the ball on that one. We just got random mailbag, but we've talked a lot about the U.S. Open, so why don't you hit the mailbag, Scotty?
Yeah, we got a variety came in this week. There is one that is sort of U.S. Open related, but let's start off. First things first, have you guys ever quit a round because of a playing partner?
I know I have left after 9, but I can't remember. I know it was out at when I used to play at Loyalist. I don't remember why though. The guy was just annoying, and we were twosome with him, and we just left after 9. We're like, you know, it's not worth it. He went out and played. I think we actually went and played the front 9 again, if I remember. Just didn't shut up. Just was slow and in the way and. Yeah, I just can't remember. So I know I have, but they didn't ask for the specifics. Have you, do you know off the top of your head? I mean, you remember anything. So if you did, you'd remember you probably got the guy's SIN number.
No, I don't. But I've done it twice. I've only done it one. Now, it's different, I think, if you do it after 9, because obviously you can bail after 9. And it looks, I just played 9. That's all I want to play or whatever. That might be a little different. I did have one of those that jumped out at me where I ended up playing Taboo Resort. I wasn't expecting to. I was on a little vacation thing and deked out there, got paired with 3 random people. Turned out to be 2 people that were more focused on a lot of other things besides golf, maybe some beverages and items that
pretty
they were smoking.
Expensive place to do that, huh?
But I had no idea. Maybe they had a deal going on in the neighborhood or something. I have no idea. And then some guy who was on a dirty weekend with his girlfriend or whatever and was trying to tell me all about it. And I was like, after 9, I was like, yeah, you know what, dude? I'm good. I'm fine. I'll see you later after that. The only other one I can think of was, if you think back, you played Glenn Lawrence over the years, a golf course where I used to hang out. Their 15th hole, I can remember one time being paired with a guy who he just constantly wanted to bet. And he wanted to bet hot dogs. And hot dogs and dimes. That's all he would bet.
Are we talking real hot dogs?
Real hot dogs. He wanted to bet.
I just want to confirm. But you should have made sure.
Yeah, every time we get to a hole, he'd want to, can we bet? I'll bet you I can do this. And it just got to an annoying level. And I had been warned about him, so they should have known better. And I literally got to the 15th hole, and I'm like, you know, dude, I got a second tee time today. We're running a little slow here. I got a bail. So, but you know, in most cases, I don't care who I play with. But he had gotten to the level of just weirdly annoying and
To bet hot.
Just weird. It's like you want to bet what? And then so it just got to the. It just got a little too strange. There was lots of other things going on in the conversation. I just thought this is not a person I really want to be hanging around with too much. And here's an opportunity. I'm closer back to the clubhouse. I don't have to go for a 3-more-hole loop. It's time to, you know, grab my golf bag and walk. And literally, I was riding a cart with the guy. So I actually, and I had a staff bag at the time. So I was willing to take the staff bag off the cart and walk it up that hill. And you know that, what that's like to walk up that 18th hole and go up that hill and all the way to the clubhouse.
Probably ran it.
Yeah, and it was more than worth it to get it done. And then, of course, then I found out afterwards a bunch of people were telling me, you know, strange stories about this guy. So I probably pulled the right move. Otherwise, I might have a stalker or somebody showing up on my doorstep at some point looking for hot dogs.
Throw that question up on Twitter. I want to hear other people's stories. Get that out there and see where that goes. Let's get that out there. I'm sure by the time we post this, Scott will post it, and then you can go back and look at those stories. I'm sure there's a bunch out there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, on to number two here. How do I know if I'm playing the appropriate T-Dex length of course?
I don't know. Are you having fun? Like, that's kind of basically it, right? Like, you know, what are your expectations? I think you said it one time to me, you know, we make too many birdies, we can move back, right? Sure. And I'll play any of them. I think if you're going and it's like, oh, I'm going to play 7,000 yards a day, you know what you're getting into. You're trying to have fun from the hard test point. You're going to hit a lot. But what if fun that day is going to be a bunch of wedges into holes? I don't know. So for me, it just doesn't really matter. But, you know, if you're struggling, then move back. I think pace of play happens. Carry. If there's a lot of force carries, that's usually a start. But But fun is really what it comes down to. Golf's
supposed to be fun. I think you're bang on. It's got to be fun. I think the biggest sign, especially for emerging golfers, is do you realistically have a chance to reach the green in regulation? I see players play off the back tees at a 7,000-yard golf course, but, you know, they hit it 170. So if they can't reach the green in regulation, have a chance to maybe have a birdie putt, I don't know how much fun that is to be trying to get up and down for 18 holes. So if this is a case of an emerging golfer...
Don't we do that already?
Yeah, I know, exactly. So why punish yourself and, you know, knowing that's going to be the rest of your golf life anyway? Yeah. So you may as well start out with a situation that you might have an opportunity for some hope, something to maybe keep you in the game for a little while and make you want to play longer. So I would think that's the biggest thing. If you all of a sudden go to a golf course and, you know, every time you've got a 5-iron or a 4-iron or a hybrid or something into a green, you know what, that's time to start moving it forward and, you know, at least get something mid or shorter irons in your hand, more commensurate with what everybody else would be doing. So, all right. This is the only one that I think is US Open related, and that's because it's talking about the golf course that hosts the US Open this year. Now, the US Open this year is going to be on the South Course. There is also the North Course, which many people are familiar with, also as part of the Farmers Insurance Open. They play the two courses for that in this US Open. They are just playing the South Course. But is Torrey Pines really a muni if it costs $200 to play?
Because it's run by the municipality.
Exactly. Right?
I don't know what it costs. It costs money to run it.
Yeah, I think that's just the misunderstanding of, you know, a lot of people think of a muni as just some rundown public course. You know, it's a golf course run by a city or a town, a municipal facility. So whether it costs $200 or $600, it still can be a muni, right? And also of note, if you are a resident there, it's $63. So,
pretty good.
Yeah. And they're the taxpayers. And I've certainly heard a lot of people over the years that, you know, they try to get there and get maybe a driver's license or something from somebody local and try to get on the golf course. It rarely ever works. But, you know, they support the golf course through the taxes. That's why they get the reduced rate. It's all the rest of us that want to go play it because we know it is a PGA Tour course or a US Open type course. Even then, $200 is, you know, a pretty slim tariff.
Probably worth it considering Pebble 7.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so. I don't think Torrey Pines is like that much worse than Pebble
at all.
If it even is. Wow,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
This tongue is growing on me throughout this whole podcast.
All right. We'll leave that one at that. On the next one here, are group lessons only for beginners? You want me to take that one?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You only ever usually see beginners out there, but I don't know. Have you done it for more than beginners, Scotty?
Yeah, it's actually, you'd be surprised, actually. You know, a past guest on the show here, Nick Starchuk, runs day schools. Another good friend of mine, Andrew Rice. yeah, runs day schools and stuff like that. So they are groups, but they are maybe more advanced as far as the education is concerned. People just sort of want to take it because it's a little bit better value. It's a reduced pricing per hour. Maybe it's the social aspect that they like. They like it being in a group environment versus one-on-one. So don't always think about it being just for beginners. You know, you can go with a group. You might be a little bit more advanced. And in some cases, you can actually, even though a pro might not be offering a group at a certain level, you can probably call them up and say, hey, I've got three buddies. We're all at the same level. Maybe you're all seven handicaps. We're really looking to focus in on our short game. Are you able to conduct a clinic for, you know, the four of us? And that's an option as well. So don't always think of it as good players have private lessons and beginners have group lessons. It's not always that way.
All right.
On to the next one here. I see a lot of teens wearing bucket hats on the golf course. A yay or nay for you guys?
Absolute yay. I just bought two. Literally just bought two bucket hats this week. I'm pro bucket hat. Yeah. I mean, I think it's Riggs from Barstool that said, like, what are you, tougher than the sun? Right? Like, yeah, the exactly. sun always yeah. wins. I mean, yeah. whether you like Riggs or not, like, it's super smart. I mean, Joel Damon wears them literally to promote, you know, protect yourself from skin cancer and things yeah. like that. So absolutely, I bought two. I'm stoked. I might be full-blown bucket hat guy all the time. I know you have your Titleist one that you wear yeah. on the range when you're doing lessons. I've never actually seen you play with it, but absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't actually played with that Aussie hat yet, but I certainly probably will. I mean, if you're standing out on the driving range for 7-8 hours in the sun, I mean, there's nothing worse than having burnt ears and a face that's just charred from the, there's just no point to it. So, you know, beyond the fact that there's a lot of great fashionable bucket hats now, and they're a lot more common. You can certainly walk into almost every pro shop and find one now. So, you know, you're not looking like Judge Smales in Caddyshack here. You know what? Get a bucket hat. You're not Spalding from that same movie or whatever. They're great. I'm all for it. So yay for me as well. All right, last one here. Favorite tournament format for you guys to play in?
A format for a whole tournament. I mean, I've only ever really played in stroke play events, but I've played
the scrambles, right?
I hate scrambles. Never a
scramble. Well, there you go. See, that's part of the question.
Hate scrambles. best ball. I mean, for me, the most fun is I love alternate shot. I've said it on here before. Oh. Someone's asked this. You hate it. I love it. I think it's fun. You get put in places you're not ever usually in, especially if you got, like, say, a lefty and you both hit, like, you know, you both had a fade, right? Now you're over spots you've never even seen before. So I love alternate shot, but if I'm just playing, I always have a match going on. Match play is my favorite. Pick up, you know, you're bored and move along.
Yeah, I like straight match play as well. Just for the fact that, you know, you're right. You play along from a speed perspective, you know, double beats, triple, you don't have to worry about it. It's not about the score that's going down there. I guess the other, you know, team format that I would like, I enjoy better ball events. I like teaming up with, you know, other pros or whatever. And, you know, you're playing your own ball, but you're scoring one of them. And, you know, that's a fun way to play for a little bit of a backup, but at least you have the experience of playing your own ball. So, yeah, I'll go with that. But match play for sure. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit more. There's another format which we're going to see in play at a Flagstick event later this year. Mm. If people actually catch the 6-1 Golfer podcast this week, Jeff Botter is actually going to be announcing details of the new tournament that they're going to be running, or Flagstick's going to be running, that actually is a two-ball tournament with a team Stableford format. So we'll dive into that a little bit more when we get all the details of that at some point. I'm sure you're going to have to find a partner, my friend.
I am. You can't play, so I got to find one. I will start the bidding process at $10. you have to pay your entry fee. All right. I think that's it for the mailbag this week, Scotty.
It is.
Well, we need to hit the tip of the week. You've been doing a great job. I've been loving the video tip of the week. I'm a visual learner. It allows me to put your video on. I get to go out back and backyard, try to replicate what you're doing. So you're hitting up the garage, and what are we talking about in the pit or the cave or whatever we're calling it these days? What are we talking about in the cave this week?
Yeah, we're going to talk about hitting very short chip shots from the fringe to a very short hole location. which is something a lot of players struggle with. They really struggle. Well, I
mean,
with,
you're not supposed to be there.
No, you're not. And you ideally, you don't want to be there. But players struggle with how to play it just because it is such a delicate shot. And certainly there's some different ways and different techniques that if you do it, it'll make it a lot easier for you.
We are back for another tip of the week here on the Tee Talk podcast. One thing I want to address today is chipping, especially around the green. And obviously, we have a standard chipping scenario, which maybe we'll use most of the time. But sometimes we get in a situation where we have a very short distance that we have to carry the golf ball into the surface, maybe only a couple of feet out of thicker rough to a target, a hole that is much closer. So it's a very delicate shot. And really, I've found over the years that it's much easier to change your technique a little bit to play the shot over a standard chipping technique. And how we're going to do that is two things. One, we don't want to have too little energy with the golf club that it's going to get stuck in the grass. We want to be able to apply enough energy with the golf club to work it through the turf. But we also don't want to apply too much extra energy to the golf ball. That's going to send it a long way. So we're going to change our ratios up a little bit. We want to get in a situation that we can apply a lot of force with the golf club, but it's not going to put a lot of force on the golf ball. Well, we can do that by a number of different things. One is to change our loft a little bit, but we don't always necessarily want to just lay the face open, have a lot of bounce and expose a lot of leading edge to the turf and have all sorts of resistance there with the grass. That might not be the best way to go about it, and we might end up with some random results. So let's change our technique just in a little bit different way. What we're going to do is we're going to put the golf ball a little bit closer to us. We're going to set the shaft a little bit more upright. So we're going to go from a normal situation to a very upright situation. That's going to do a couple of things. We end up with more of a putting style stroke as opposed to a chipping stroke. It also only exposes part of the leading edge of the golf club to the turf, and it makes it easier for the club to cut through the grass. On top of that, it adds a little bit of loft to the club as well. So what we've done basically is we can make a bigger swing with enough energy to get the club through the grass, helped by that reduced leading edge working its way through. But the golf ball comes out a little bit softer. So it's kind of a very tricky technique. You'll definitely have to practice it, but just basically get the golf ball a little bit closer to you, get the shaft a little bit more upright. Just make that more vertical stroke through, and you'll see the golf ball will pop out super, super soft. Play around with this. You'd be surprised how it works. Works very well as well out of Bermuda grass, just because you don't have a lot of exposed leading edge to the grass. So give that a try. Play around with that at your golf club. I think you'd be pleased with the results that you see, especially for those short shots around the green.
Scotty, as per usual, love it. Make sure you head to our Instagram account, Tee Talk Podcast. Been posting a lot of stories on there. Might throw a couple press conferences from Cobble Beach out there
Nice. This
week, Scotty. Just about the rounds, the course. Might try to get some content. I'm really looking forward to it. Have you been to Cobble?
I have.
What should I expect?
Yeah, you should expect great views, open golf course, but so hopefully the wind doesn't get you. Definitely a challenging golf course, so choose your tees very carefully, but certainly scenic, and you can't beat the views, and you're going to see a couple of holes there that you're going to spend more time looking around with your head up rather than looking at the hole itself. So certainly enjoy it. It was in great condition the last time I was there a couple of years ago. Beautiful in the fall. I know obviously it's not the fall, but you'll probably want to go back there in the fall after you play it for the first time this week.
Can't wait. It's the final tune-up before we head to the Flagstaff Open. So next week, we'll break all that down. We'll break down the U.S. Open. We'll break down if any of our headlines came true, whether we liked it or not. Our bets, the whole nine yards, and the draft. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to our episode sponsor, Ping. Go check out the Ping G425 lineup, wherever Ping golf clubs are sold. Thank you to our audio engineer, producer extraordinaire, who didn't let us know he was in town, Brendan Kennedy, for doing what he always does. And thank you for you, Scotty, and the listeners for coming every single week. Any final thoughts before we wrap up our U.S. Open preview show, Scott?
Yeah, you know what? Just keep an eye on Mitch and his boss, Taylor, this week. You know, it was great for Mitch to come on and chat with us, but they should be very fun to watch this week. And certainly, you know, even though I didn't watch a lot of golf last week, I think I'm going to watch a lot of golf this week for sure.
Yeah, it's weird, too. We went the whole podcast. We didn't mention Corey Connors coming in, this guy. No. you know, you're getting good odds on him too. If that putter gets hot, he will be in the mix come Sunday. I mean, just such great ball striker. So yeah. I truly believe it. A lot of Canadian content. That's the dream scenario. We talked about the headlines we want to see happen, but the dream scenario for us obviously is a Canadian picking up a win at the US Open. When was the last time that happened, Scott? Do you know? I'm sure you got it in the back of your
mind. Canadian won what?
The US Open. Has it ever happened?
The fifth of never.
Never. Okay. So not even like 1919, nothing,
no.
Eh?
Nothing.
There we go. So you could be the first. Well, there you go. Fun trivia with Scott. Maybe, you know what? We did that one time. I got to bring back golf trivia with you and see if you can do it. I think I went through all Jeopardy questions and early pandemic.
Yeah, yeah,
nothing going on. And I was like going through Jeopardy questions and all sorts of different things because golf wasn't happening. So maybe we'll get back to that at some point.
Right.
But golf is happening in the US Open. We hope you enjoy it at Torrey Pines. We will see you next week and we can't wait to chat with you then.